Okay, put your science hats on because we're going to take your questions for David Talbot and Wallace Thornhill as we talk about the electric universe right here on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast. George Norrie with you, along with two of our guests, David Talbot, Wallace Thornhill, and your calls. David, your thoughts on intelligent life in the universe, yes or no?
I can only assume that there is a great deal of intelligent life in the universe, but I can't argue for that position. It just does not seem like a very meaningful world if we're
without
alone
it
here.
And
it doesn't seem even plausible to me to imagine all of the intelligence that went into the universe to create the sense of harmony that you pick up just by observing things in space and so on, and that all of this was just
a fluke.
A fluke that we landed here on Earth and there's nothing else out there. It just it doesn't add up to me personally. This is a very subjective opinion, of course, so I don't argue with people on that subject, but I know that every human being looking out at the cosmos must have some sense of connection to all of the universe, to the universe as a whole, let's say. And I certainly experience that, and even those scientists such as, let's say, Carl Sagan, for example, who marveled at the beauties of the universe and completely resisted any spiritual interpretation of what he saw, but he continually marveled at the wonder and the extravagant beauty of the universe. When I experience that, I cannot just see particles and empty space and nothing more, which is a very common idea in the sciences today, that is the substructure of the natural world, particles and empty space and nothing more. I've never in my life, not since childhood, have I been able to accept that picture of the natural world.
Your thoughts on that, Wallace, too? Intelligent life out there?
Yes, I think the electric universe shows that it's absolutely necessary. When you look back at the geological record, you see that there were mass extinctions and then new animals sprang up in the new environment. To do that requires that the information that's already out there in the universe about what sort of life form will exist under these circumstances. And if you go to the bottom of the ocean, you know, near a volcanic vent, you'll find life forms down there, which all suggests to me that the universe is just awash with information which is necessary for life to exist wherever it can find a niche.
All right, well, let's go take some phone calls now. Let's pick it up by going to Clint, truck driving in New Jersey. Welcome to the program, Clint. Go ahead.
Hi, George and guests. I'm fascinated by the gravity, light, and electric connection. I would love to have somebody explain gravity in layman's terms. And also, I love your debunking the Big Bang theory. On free energy, the integral fast reactor, I think you had Tom Blees on there.
Yeah.
And it's a safe reactor that will use up all the spent fuel rods, et cetera, et cetera. But my big question for your guest tonight is, if you had a long wire and hooked to the North and South Pole, wouldn't you be able to get free energy from that wire?
That's an interesting take. Who wants that?
We already have, in effect, that kind of connection in the ionosphere of the Earth. And we know that electric currents rotate in a ring around the Earth, and that's because the magnetic field forces the current to take that path. But I don't think that's the way to go to get free energy, so to speak. In fact, my view is that energy is held inside all atoms, all matter, and it is easier to get out than anyone at present thinks. Once we can do that, then we will find ways of getting energy out of water, you know, out of hydrogen, out of the things that we have in abundance and do it in a way which doesn't require the idea that we have to do things like the sun, because the electric universe shows that we don't understand the sun either and the way it produces energy.
Without gravity, would we be up a creek?
We certainly would. Yes, gravity is one of the subtle forces in the universe. And it actually ties in at a biological level too, because it's the same kind of connection that occurs in the natural therapies. You know, they have this idea of subtle energy. Well, there is a subtle energy, and it's this connection between all atoms, all living matter. And it also has, I think, a great significance in trying to understand consciousness, memory, and the brain.
Okay, let's go back for more calls. We go to Robert in Baltimore, Maryland now. Robert, welcome to the program. You're up with us.
Hello, George.
Hey.
Gentlemen, it seems to me there's an inconsistency in your using the word electric for your universe, because as you said earlier, you don't want to consider the term spiritual or anything religious oriented. However, the term electric is associated very much with electric fields, such as Maxwell defines in his equations of both magnetic and electric fields. And that is very much subject to the time constraints of the traveling of the waves in space, which is inconsistent with what you're talking about, where you have more of a quantum effect of not having a time delay, where things are tied together in a timeless way. So it seems like you're using the wrong term. The term electric, maybe you should find another term, like a quantum universe.
I think the quantum, the word quantum has been misused both by scientists and by so-called New Age people. It is the electric force. That's all there is. The difference between light and those electromagnetism is that it's a wave disturbance. It's transverse wave disturbance, like the waves on the surface of a pond. And as you know, a wave takes time to move through that medium. The electric force, though, is rather like a daisy chain. It's like a rope. You pull on a rope and you feel it practically instantly. Whereas if you wave the rope, the person on the other end, it takes some time for the wave to arrive at them. And that's the analogy I would use.
With gravity out there, and again, without it, would everything be still in order?
No, because even though we talked about electrical interactions between planets and so on,
yeah,
being establishing order, it establishes order by modifying the gravitational force, modifies the mass and therefore the gravitational force. So gravity is essential for the clockwork-like activity of the solar system.
So for it to work, it had to be there.
Understanding it in electrical terms rather than just using the word gravity, which nobody understands. You then talk about a model for it in electrical terms, which the engineers can understand and maybe make something interesting out of it, like anti-gravity.
So back to the Big Bang for a moment, or the lack of. What do you think happened, Wallace?
No one knows. And Halk Naab said, you know, that all you can see when you look out there and you look at it through the lens that he was using, everything's quite happily coexisting without crashing into one another or falling together, that it is in equilibrium. So he said the universe is of unknown age and unknown extent.
My mother used to tell me about God, and she would always say, always was, always will be. Kind of sounds like the universe, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Really? Wallace, I mean, David, chime in here.
Well, I'm not sure where to go with that one, because that's at the level of the biggest picture questions, George. And
moms are that way, too, aren't they? They're good at
moms would be that way, and many, many people are clamoring today for answers to the deepest questions that a human being can ask. And so it seems almost like an unfair position that we take when we resist providing answers for people to the biggest questions. The reason for that is that the Electric Universe movement is all-encompassing. And when you are inviting into a study of the electric force in the natural world, you don't do yourself any favors by advancing philosophical, spiritual, or religious positions. I personally hold to and have virtually all my life held to a fundamentally spiritual interpretation of what a human being is. I don't generally talk about that publicly at our conferences. I avoid it altogether. But in private conversation, I am endlessly engaged in discourses with people as to the spiritual nature of human beings, the nature of the spiritual connection, and what is happening in the world as human beings are being forced by events to confront all of the divisive forces that have kept human beings in a state of war against each other. So that's a personal conversation, and I tend to feel anything that asks people coming into the Electric Universe to hold a spiritual interpretation of life or of human identity would dishonor the underlying principle that we hold to, that we do not require any philosophical or religious or spiritual position in order to join us in an examination of the electric force and the way it reveals itself to us in the natural world. And that is our life purpose, you might say. The rest of it belongs to our personal lives and our personal beliefs.
Could the electric universe be contributing to climate change?
I think the electric universe takes the position that the climate changes naturally,
yeah,
and that we just have to get used to it.
It's a cycle.
That mankind has very little influence. we talk about climate experts who all agree, but there's no such thing as consensus science. As Michael Crichton pointed out in a famous lecture of his, he says, if it's consensus, it ain't science. And if it's science, it ain't consensus. And yet that's what we've got. You have to remember that the climate scientists themselves rely on information from their peers in other disciplines. And because they're all specialists, the specialists think they know certain things, and the things that they get wrong, they then mislead experts in other fields. Now, the climate scientists have no idea of the electrical energy that's input into our weather systems. There are a few people around the world, a few scientists, who are looking into it and having more success, I think, in predicting wild weather and so on, and even earthquakes. We're looking into that as well. But to say that all climate experts say that we're heading for global warming is pretty much meaningless.
Let's go to Zorro in Escondido, California, west of the Rockies. Hey, Zorro, go ahead.
Gentlemen, it's a pleasure to be on the show. Good morning. How are you?
Morning.
All?
Morning. I hope you are well, too.
Oh, very well. Distinguished guests, quick comment and a short question.
Sure.
And a bigger question. As you gentlemen have been devoting your efforts and thinking towards knowing the origin of the universe and whatnot, and in this case, the electric universe and issues related to that, I truly believe that human beings will never be able to understand the origin of the universe. That's just my personal perspective. Hopefully that will change in the future, but it just seems, though, that we don't have the language at this point in our history to envelop and couch the understanding of the, you know, the ultimate question of the origin of the universe and things related to it. But hopefully things will change. I hope we live long enough to maybe experience that. Short question is, people out there who claim that they do know it, I don't believe it, but I guess the larger question is this. Do you gentlemen think that we will be able to develop language terms, visuals, whatever we want to call the communication device, to allow us all to truly understand the origin of the universe? Is that something within our fingertips, our grasp? Can we actually do that, like within the next 20 years or so?
That is an interesting, perplexing question. Wallace, I'll give that to you.
Yeah, my view is that, and I follow the radio astronomer Gerard Vasseur in this, that who are we in our arrogance to think that we will have the answer to the origin of the universe within a microsecond of asking the question? Because when you look at the history of mankind and our brief history of science, it is arrogant to think that we even can ask the right questions. I think the electric universe helps us ask better questions, but as to whether we'll ever figure it out, that I cannot answer. The first big question that has to be answered is, what is the ultimate structure of matter? Nobody's answered that question.
No.
Present, we've got a whole lot of mathematical theories. Some of them don't make any sense at all. I'd suggest that all of them don't make any sense. So that's the first thing you need to know, is what is matter? How do you, what's its ultimate construction? And these are the kinds of questions we should be asking, not trying to make up stories about a beginning which begins with something which has nothing to do with science, and that is the singularity that became the Big Bang.
How about you, David?
Well, this is where human imagination, working with the tools of science today, just flails around trying to understand things that the tools couldn't possibly deliver to us as reliable answers. This is just the nature of the human predicament. In the end, there is more that will be revealed to us, I would say, from our own introspection and from our own reflections on the nature of the question and the answers that come to us when we ask, who am I? What is my relationship to other people? Why am I here? What is the purpose of life? Or is there simply no purpose in life?
All $64,000 questions.
Yeah, and I just will go so far as to say I have chosen in my life the meaningful answer, the meaningful universe. It's not something to be defended in argument, but you do find a reason to assert the meaningful life as you experience connection to other people, and you see that this person is none other than myself.
We're coming back for final phone calls next on Coast to Coast AM. I'm going back to St. Louis for the June 18th live stage show event at the Lindenwood University. Full information at our highlight reel at coasttocoastam.com. If you're out there, if you want to hit that area, come on out. The tickets are going out the door, but you might as well grab a few as they fly by. Okay, welcome back to Coast, David Talbot, Wallace Thornhill, and you, your final calls. Wallace, we haven't talked too much about Mars. What do you think Mars, was Mars always a planet? Was it captured? And then some say that one of its moons might have been an asteroid.
That's true. In fact, there's very little difference between asteroids and Martian moons, and they probably, most of them have a similar origin. Mars was piecing together the information from the ancient petroglyphs and things like that, we can establish that Mars was a part of a group of objects which was associated with the Earth from early times. And so it's a recent addition to the solar system as well as Venus. But it was captured, but the process of capture was devastating to that poor planet. so that it could quite possibly have had very similar conditions for life prior to the catastrophes. But it's had atmosphere, surface material, whatever water was there, stripped off it in the process of...
And it could have had some general life.
It could have had life, yeah, that's true.
Could that catastrophe happen here now on planet Earth?
Not now, unless we had another rearrangement of the solar system, in which case, you know, all bets are off.
Sure. Oh, yeah. Or a life-threatening asteroid or something like that.
Well, one thing
well,
I might
be bigger than an asteroid. It would have to be, you know, something planetary-sized because, as I said,
okay.
The objects tend to avoid one another. The Earth, and also the Earth has its own Space Wars type defense system. If an object gets close enough and it's electrically very different from the Earth, the two will exchange discharges which can destroy the incoming object. And in fact, there's good evidence that that's what happened at the Tunguska event in Russia back near, I think it was around 1905. And there was never any bolide found. It seems to have been destroyed on entry into the Earth's electrical environment.
David, your thoughts?
Yes, I was going to mention that the planet Mars has been a special interest of ours, and we have been particularly interested in the indications of planet-wide catastrophe. And perhaps the greatest testament to the planet-altering events in the Martian past is the hemispheric dichotomy. I mean, here you have a northern hemisphere of Mars that has basically lost sufficient surface to eliminate all of the cratering that would have been natural to that planet's evolution, since you only have to look at the southern hemisphere of Mars to see abundant cratering of the surface. Now, if Mars was in fact part of an earlier planetary system as we have reconstructed it, Mars would have been acted upon electrically, hemispherically. So electrical excavation of the surface of Mars is a fundamental tenet, actually, of the electric universe paradigm. Now, we have a video that, because it's free, I'm comfortable just mentioning this video. It's called The Lightning Scarred Planet Mars. And if you will watch this video with just an openness to extraordinary possibilities, letting the evidence itself lead the way, I think you will feel very confident that the history of Mars does not look anything like the history of Mars as it's presented in textbooks today, that Mars was sculpted from pole to pole by electrical activity. This is the lightning-scarred planet Mars, which is available at the thunderbolts.info website. It's for free viewing, the entire documentary, and it's been very persuasive with people driving people to a completely new picture of Martian history, Earth history, and planetary history as a whole.
All right, let's wrap up this half hour with final phone calls. Joseph in Dayton, Ohio. Joseph, good morning.
Hi, Mr. Norrie. How you doing?
Good, Joseph. Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate you taking my call too, sir.
Okay.
It's a blessing to hear you every night and everything else. Keeps me going through the night pretty much.
Perfect.
But I had a question for your guests here about atoms.
Okay.
And what some electricity stuff to do with those. I'm trying to think of how to put it together here. My mind's kind of, I don't know, it's off the charts right now. But anyway, when it comes down to atoms and stuff, is it possible to charge an atom in some kind of a fashion? Because atoms, they're electrical too, right?
They sure are. And, you know, we've got electrons okay. and neutrons. And Wallace, jump in here and help us out.
Yeah. The atom is electrical. All the particles within it are electrical. What were you going to suggest?
Would it be possible to charge an atom in a way that it would want to bind with the other atoms. Like, say it's just the atoms around air here, like nitrogen atoms or something like that. Would it be physically possible or even figuratively possible to charge those to bind together to create some kind of a little force field like you saw on those spaceships from Independence Day or something?
Yeah, interesting you should mention Independence Day. Just naturally, atoms adjust their charges so that they attract one another and form molecules and so on. That's just normal chemistry. The Independence Day film showed that incredible discharge that comes from the base of that alien spacecraft, and that is a more or less a reconstruction of the plasma discharge in high-energy laboratories. It's called a plasma focus, which is a very interesting thing from the point of view of the plasma universe and the electric universe. But I won't go into that right now, but certainly chemistry can be understood in a different way, because it has been admitted by chemists that they don't understand the chemical bond. And if they don't understand the chemical bond, then you've got to ask, well, do nuclear scientists understand the nucleus and the nuclear bond? And I suggest they don't. But when you do understand it, it offers a way for people to devise means of creating new compounds and nuclear reactions, which at present seem impossible.
Hey, David, I found it fascinating that in all the Frankenstein movies, there's always electricity involved.
That's been a fascinating little sidelight, hasn't it? And actually, Wall might have something to say about the relationship of Frankenstein-type electrical phenomena to biological transformations of one kind or another. Wall.
That's right, yes. There was a French guy who was a scientist who was recommended for the Nobel Prize, I believe. And he showed by simple experiments that you could do in a high school lab that biological systems are capable of performing nuclear reactions. So he's already laid the groundwork for beginning to understand how we might generate energy from the nucleus of an atom instead of just by chemistry, and therefore have simple access to power, unlimited power.
All right, let's go to Lorianne now in British Columbia in Canada. Hey, Lorianne, thank you.
Hi, thanks so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I want to ask your guest if this electrical universe could be possible, like the spontaneous combustion?
Sorry, I didn't...
Spontaneous combustion. There have been reports that people have combusted, broke out into fires. I wonder if the electrical universe had anything to do with that.
I'm not sure. If there have been some attempts to explain it naturally, and I think that must be the case, that there is a natural explanation for it. But I don't think it has anything per se to do with the electric universe. I could say more on the subject of ball lightning, but...
Right.
When it comes to that, I remember reading quite a bit about it some years ago, but I couldn't see how it would happen. But I know people have come up with theories.
Are there in your Thunderbolts of the Gods, we highlight a little bit on this, but how active is electricity and lightning in the universe, Wallace?
Oh, well, that's fundamental. In fact, by studying lightning on Earth, we will begin to understand more the electrical connection between the sun and the earth, because even now it's not understood how lightning is generated. It may be a surprise to people to know that, but although we know what it does once it is formed, we don't know what causes it. I mean, they talk about the updrafts and downdrafts in the cloud, but that's a case of which came first. An electrical disturbance in a cloud is enough to create phenomenal updrafts or downdrafts. And then the question is, which comes first? Is it the electricity or is it the updrafts and the downdrafts?
Well, if I could just interject a question for Wall here. Wall, would you direct our attention to a connection of the Earth to its larger plasma environment as being essential, perhaps, to understanding the nature of lightning, that it isn't just a charge separation in the terms that they have localized the formation of lightning, but something
That's
going
right.
on between the Earth and its external plasma environment?
Yes, we've got all the evidence we need from those sprites and that, which have now been filmed from space. They've been filmed from high-altitude aircraft above big thunderstorms. That is the connection between the cloud and the ionosphere. And then scientists have also seen the connection between the ionosphere and the magnetosphere. And the astronomers have noted that there are so-called magnetic flux tubes, which is just a euphemism for electric currents flowing between the Sun and the Earth. So it's all connected electrically. Once again, this is the thing about the electric universe. Everything is connected.
Let's go to Shay in Mississippi, first-time caller. Hello, Shay. Good morning.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for taking my call. Hi, George.
Very welcome. Thanks.
Hi, gentlemen. I was calling about is could it account the possibility that there was less gravity force on the ancient people of the world, which gave them ability to quarry these tons and tons of stone and move them around?
Absolutely so.
Yeah, that is possible, yes. As I said, gravity is not understood currently. All we have are mathematical equations, and it's assumed that what we experience on Earth is the same everywhere, and the same goes for inside the Earth. But even experiments done down mines doesn't seem to match what we'd expect from Newton's law of gravity. The electric universe says no, that the gravity on Earth is determined to a large extent by the charge on the surface of the Earth. So if you change the charge, the Earth's gravity will change. And the best evidence that it's changed dramatically is that the dinosaurs existed, and they were so huge that if they were in present-day gravity, they could not lift themselves off the ground.
How could this universe be so packed with electrical charges and it not, like, blow up?
Well, that's not the tendency of electricity. It tends to find balance, and this is the essential nature that we observe of the universe, that it appears to be in balance. You can't get that if all you've got is a force like gravity, which currently is believed to be only attractive, because then all you have are explosions and collisions to deal with, which is a pretty limited toolbox.
Jerry in Southern Indiana. Hi, Jerry, go ahead.
Hi, George. First-time caller. Great show tonight. Great guest.
Thank you.
You guys mentioned before the last break anti-gravity, and then earlier, you know, you discussed gravity as attracting and, of course, at a certain point, repelling. So it just made me think, you know, is electricity or maybe electromagnetism, you know, could that be used to create a gravitational field? And theoretically, could that field be modulated so as to be used in a vehicle to make that vehicle repel or attract to a body such as a planet? So essentially, could electricity be the key to anti-gravity flight?
30 seconds. Wallace, take it.
I believe that anti-gravity is possible. It does not necessarily involve charging things up. It may be as simple as understanding the gyroscope, because it behaves strangely in the gravitational field. And I think I know why it does that.
Indeed it does. Hey, both of you, thank you, David and Wallace. Appreciate you being on the program.
Righto.
And good
thank
luck
you.
With your Very book, good, The Electric Universe. All details, all the websites, always are linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. For Jeff Duray, Dan Galante, Donna Walker, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasor, Stephanie Smith, Chris Borelson, George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.